Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show today as Penn State gets ready for the whiteout game with Michigan at Beaver Stadium. My broadcast partner, who has carried me every single play for years, is Jack Hamm. Partner, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Good to be with you again, Steve.
All right. We've watched this team negotiate a 6-0, and I think, to me, this has been an example of you can have preconceived expectations and notions of what a team's going to be like, but everything is different. What's different about this team that maybe some people didn't expect?
I think it's on the defensive side of the ball. We expect it to be a very explosive offense. Teams a bit playing catch-up football against us, and it really has been a different case right now with our defense playing so well. I mean, we've got guys. We don't have that one dominant guy on defense, but we got 11 guys out there playing well, playing smart together. And probably the thing I'm most surprised with is how well that secondary is playing. I mean, in the last game, they are just being aggressive with the ball on the receivers against Northwestern, driving on routes, inside routes, coming up with interceptions. Amani on a big interception, getting the ball to high point. And then you talk about Haley on the outside and also Campbell forcing runs. A lot of times their support guys in that cover two, they got to turn things back inside. Not only did they turn it back inside, they made tackles downfield. And Steve, our tackling has gotten better since day one, and that has also been a surprise. They have been solid, not very many runs after the catch downfield in that secondary.
This is something every school, I think, goes through, the NFL goes through it. The way practice is structured today, what has that done to tackling, and are the games actually how you get better at tackling?
Well, you're right. I mean, because you're limiting so much of the contact in preseason camp that the only way you get good at tackling is, you're out there playing in-game situations. So, the first couple of games, and I was very critical of how many missed tackles we've had, but as the season has gone on, you can just see it kind of snowballing in a sense. And the key, I mean, the leader out there is Marcus Allen. I mean, he's flying around there like a missile out there, big plays, getting a safety, open field tackles, hitting and, knocking the ball loose, putting a helmet on the football. I mean, he's, he leads by example out there. And then you have a solid guy like Kabinde inside. And it just seemed everybody, but especially in that secondary, all of a sudden Apke is now making plays at the line of scrimmage, and it almost becomes infectious in a sense of the leader is Marcus Allen, Kabinde out there, but those guys have come on, and they've come on very fast.
What is the length at corner meant in certain cases? Obviously, Grant Haley's had a great year, but Campbell's 6'1", Amani Oyewariye is about 6'1", maybe a little bit bigger than that. Tariq Castro Fields is about 6'1". What can length, if properly played, mean at corner?
Well, when you're out there as a press corner on the outside, and I think we learned a valuable lesson in the Southern Cal game in the Rose Bowl last year, because those are tall wide receivers and end up being jump balls downfield. First of all, you got to play with technique, and I think Amani has probably done the best job of press coverage, jamming a receiver, run with him. And that length in the Northwestern game gave him the ability to look back for the football and end up coming up with a key interception early in the game when, the game was just in the first quarter, so where Northwestern is trying to score. We didn't have turnovers last year. We have them now. But tall corners, I think, are going to be the thing that's going to be the norm in college football, because you can see the wide receivers, and we have them as well. There's 6'4 out there. And the jump balls downfield are almost going to be a mismatch. So you have to get length in that, especially at the corner position. We're starting to get that, and I think Penn State will recruit that way as well going forward.
In fact, this is something you experienced in your pro career, because Mel Blount was a big corner, and obviously, I mean, he's ultra-talented, but he made a big difference as to how the game was played.
Exactly. Where you can jam them at the line, you got to let receivers go downfield. being physical at the line of scrimmage is probably where a corner wins or loses on that particular play. If you're able to all of a sudden make that wide receiver go parallel at the line of scrimmage before he gets up the field, that's a step that he doesn't have going downfield, running a route or a deep pattern or even an in route. So if you misdirect him initially by being physical, by being a big, tall corner on the outside, yeah, I think you win your battle right there at the line of scrimmage. And our corners have done a great job. You got to give our defensive coaches a lot of credit because you win on technique out there, especially in that corner position. And we've seen guys like especially Amani making plays and not a pass interference call, but looking back, finding the football, and a lot of times getting at the high point. That's just good technique at the defensive back position.
Jack, sub packages mean a lot today in college football. One of the sub packages that Penn State started putting in last year was the four defensive end package. And this year, for the most part, it's been Sharif Miller, Ryan Buchholz, Kevin Givens, and now Shaka Toney has entered that mix. What has that allowed Brent Pry to do?
Well, first of all, when you go to that package, you've got a lot of quickness at the line of scrimmage. And normally you're going to be ahead and you're playing where you're getting after the quarterback. That kind of athleticism at the defensive line position is going to be make big factors, I think, down the stretch on mobile quarterbacks trying to get out of the pocket. Being more athletic on your pass rushes like this, and these guys are interchangeable parts out there. These guys are very quick, and I'm really impressed with Shaka Toney because it really wasn't all quickness. He made plays last week against Northwestern. It was a little bit of a bull rush, also with his quickness, and coming off the edge like that. I think he's going to be a force going forward in the second half of the season. So that gives you more athleticism at the defensive line position, especially when we're going to face a lot of mobile quarterbacks down the stretch.
All right, so now let's get to the offensive side of it. What have you seen in Trace McSorley so far this year, Jack?
Well, I think Trace has been a quarterback where he's been a little bit inconsistent, I think, in the first six games. I mean, he gets on a roll against Northwestern. He's putting 15 in a row. I think we have to be more consistent on our first down plays because, when we play Michigan, Ohio State, or Michigan State in the next 3 weeks, we can't get behind the chains like that on first down. I think we're going to end up having to throw the football more on first down, off of play action, get Barkley involved because that's the mismatch we're going to have, the logical mismatch we have. And because we've had too many negative plays on first down, Steve, has really hurt us. And when you play, catch up and you're behind the chains like that against a defense like Michigan, where you're in for a lot of trouble, we can't have those kind of negative plays going forward.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Penn State was 8 of 16 on third down against Northwestern, which I think has been kind of lost in the mix. But Michigan's a team that, 59% of their series against them have ended in three and out. So falling behind in the chains for them can just be fatal to a drive.
Without a doubt. It will be magnified against a team like Michigan. And I think a lot of teams like Northwestern, like Iowa, like Indiana, they are going to give you those completions where we're going to have nice numbers here, but they're going to force you to make a 10, 11 play drive. And they're saying that maybe we're not good enough in that red zone area. We've gotten better and we're going to have to get better. But that's how we're going to take away what Penn State loves to do. Explosive, big plays, 50, 70 yard bombs downfield. That's been our MO. Especially last year. Well, defensive coordinators right now are trying to take that away from us and make us methodically go down the field. So it really changed the character of what we do offensively. And we're going to have to adjust to that. We're going to have to be patient. We're going to have to be disciplined to take all that underneath stuff, take that out pattern for 7-8 yards and continue to do that because I think more defenses are going to force us to do that downfield.
Did that Iowa final drive where they went 12 plays, 80 yards, is that the example of Penn State making the adjustment of patience?
Exactly, Steve. I mean, the drive before that, I think it was a 15-play drive where
right.
We ended up getting the field goal, missed the field goal. Those are two drives at the end where, you got to take what a defense gives you. And like I said, if we love big plays and bombs downfield, well, defensive coordinators are pretty smart here in the Big Ten. They'll take away what we love to do and literally try to change our personality, make us more methodical downfield because if you're you got a two safeties back there deep downfield. You are not going to be able to complete the deep ball and try to get, you know, just a one-on-one downfield. They're not. They're going to take that away from us. So it's going to be Barkley, you know, out of the backfield. It's going to be short possession time. It's going to be in routes. They're going to be open for us. You know, where Hamilton has run so many, we got to make sure we catch them. Like the play to Hamilton from Stevens down the rim near the goal line. He ended up dropping that football, but we're going to have to be consistent in that way and so take advantage of what the defense has given us.
You mentioned Stevens in that answer, Jack. What has his versatility meant, and how much more can they possibly do with a guy like that?
Well, I think Stevens is, you know, he came in here, Steve, the 6'5" guy who's about 185, 190 pounds. He's 230 now. And he can, he'll run it out of that backfield. But I think the fact of another quarterback back there all of a sudden makes the defense a little bit question what is Penn State doing offensively. On the touchdown, I thought the defensive back thought that Stevens was going to run like a wheel route like Barkley normally does, and he just cuts underneath it, you know, back to the middle of the field. McSorley finds him, and he is wide open. I'm sure there's much more things in the package like that because he's run with the football, caught the football a couple of times. But all of a sudden, Stevens is a 6'5", 230-pound target out there for McSorley. So it gives us one more weapon in our offense, and especially down in that red zone area, because obviously he can throw the football as well. And I think it has made defenses, I think Northwestern on that play, I think they have just a little bit of a question mark, and then he just circles and curls in the middle of the end zone for the touchdown.
Right. You know, a lot of people, you know, going into the season, the one, quote, loss on offense was Chris Godwin. Have you even thought about that, watching Penn State's receiver play this year?
No, not that Godwin wasn't. I don't take nothing away from him. He made a number of key catches for us, especially inside the hash mark areas last year. But, you know, Steve, the depth on our football team right now, I mean, across the board, including wide receiver right now, you know, I'm waiting for Charles to get involved in the offense as well. But with Johnson on the outside now being much more comfortable after making a big catch against Iowa, you know, Blacknall, you know, I think he's probably one of the smoothest wide receivers in running routes downfield. So not that Godwin wasn't an outstanding player for us, but that's an area where we have a lot of depth there right now and a lot of guys. There's a lot of rotation in our wide receivers, so we haven't really missed a beat.
What has field position meant in all of this? I mean, the Steelers, when you play, were always brilliant at that. What has it meant to this team?
Well, any time of defense, so especially like keep time in the game, like the Northwestern game where it was 10-0, you start the third quarter and you're kicking off to Northwestern, and you get a couple of three and outs and get the football back, especially this offense, when you get it under the 40-yard line where they can open up anything they want to do. The routes they ran downfield to Polk and Tompkins for the touchdown, they ended up with Stevens. I mean, you're not worried about inside your own 20-yard line where you may want to, you know, tighten it down and maybe be a little bit more conservative. Not that that's our style, but at the 40-yard line, it opens up the entire playbook for you. And when the defense gives you the ball in that kind of a field position with this kind of offense, we have got to take advantage of it even that much more in the second half of the season.
Because, I mean, the athletes that they have on the cover teams, I mean, have, and, you know, you put that in conjunction with Gilligan, the payoff is right there in front of us for all of us to see. Athletes in combination with a guy that can put the ball inside the 10.
Steve, those are those hidden yards in there at the end of the game when you look at where the field position is and the reasons why. I mean, number one, obviously, the defense on those three and outs in the second half were huge against an offense for Northwestern who really likes to throw the football with an outstanding quarterback. Then you get the punting game. All these things that we didn't have before. I think it's where the recruiting has gone in the last couple of years and where our special teams, I think they run parallel. We have better athletes out there coming downfield, making plays on punts, making plays on kickoff returns. And a guy like Charles is probably one of the guys who's the leader on those special teams and making huge plays where you force a fair catch from a punt return guy. That's going to save you 15 to 20 yards on a return, or now with your defense playing so well. So they kind of run in concert with each other. I think, you know, the defense helps, the special teams helps to get good field position for an offense.
You and I have broadcast all of the whiteout games that they've had here at Penn State. Now, you and I both know that they were going to be big games anyway. So anytime you play an Ohio State, a Michigan, whomever, it was going to be a big game anyway. When they add in the whiteout part just as an atmosphere, as you've sat there and watched it play out in the stands, how much do they mean to a game just with that little added touch?
Steve, it is huge. And I always used to pride myself on the fact that, you know, you just got to concentrate on what you're doing and kind of try to block out everything else and just, you know, play your game. But at Beaver Stadium, the electricity of when it is, especially, you know, this is going to be a huge game. You're right. Most of them have been they've been big football games. I mean, the crowd is so involved. And I'll tell you what else. It is an advantage on those false starts. You're going to have a team like Michigan, a quarterback who's never experienced that here at Beaver Stadium for Michigan coming in here. Crowd noise is going to be huge for the night game. The whiteout is so impressive out there. And it is a factor. That's what home field advantage is all about, especially here in the Big Ten where you have over 100,000 in a lot of these stadiums. And the players, too. I talked to a lot of those guys. I mean, it is electric. That's why you come to Penn State to play games like this, big games like that, and the whiteout just adds to it.
All right, partner. Appreciate it.
All right, Steve. I will talk to you.
All right, Jack, we will definitely talk. Good news there as we get ready for Penn State and Michigan Saturday night at Beaver Stadium, 7:30 the kickoff, 6 o'clock the airtime on News Radio 1070 WKOK and the Penn State Sports Network. We got the Jack right away out of the top of the hour break, but we'll have now our play-by-play call of the day. It goes back, actually, to last Friday night. And, you know, I've talked about the survive and advance. Friday night was one of those nights last week, and coaches don't like playing on Friday night. But Washington State went to Cal and got run out 37-3. Ranks of the unbeaten gone. Any chance of the college football playoff for them is gone. Clemson, the chance of a college football playoff is not gone. They can still get there. But this is what I talk about, controlling your own destiny along the way. Because there are so many twists and turns in a college football season, and last weekend, the then number two ranked team that everyone thought would not lose a game went to the Carrier Dome, and this joyous scene happened.
And for Syracuse, party time. The upset, pulled by the Orange. They defeat Clemson 27-24.
And that's the way it is in college football now. It's the way it is in college football. The season goes, it is a war of attrition every single week. I go back to July, and I talked about Penn State controlling its own destiny in this as part of our play-by-play call of the day there. And controlling your own destiny is important, where you have to rely on one entity and one entity only to get to where you want to go. Penn State only needs right now to rely on itself to get where it wants to go. They've got the schedule to do it, starting on Saturday with the final six games. They have got the schedule that you cannot deny Penn State. They keep winning. You cannot deny them. That means you control your own destiny. That's the most important part to me in all of this as to where they are right now. No looking ahead. You're never going to look past Michigan to begin with anyway. So that makes the task this week. There's no looking ahead to the next one. That's not going to happen. This is big game, big stakes coming up on Saturday night at Beaver Stadium. And it's where exactly you want to be. And you don't know along the way in today's college game where it's going to happen. But Iowa State beat Oklahoma. Did anyone outside of Ames, I'm not even sure in Ames they expected it, expect Iowa State to beat Oklahoma? No, Oklahoma was that, after beating Ohio State, they were that surefire lock where only the only real problem in their path was going to be Oklahoma State. Oh, wait, Oklahoma State also lost. And then USC lost. And Washington State lost. And now, of course, Clemson, last Friday night, lost. So this is what you have. There's this clearing out that is happening along the way that's clearing things out where, again, Penn State is in the spot, and these losses have not meant anything to Penn State. They have not, so far, have not meant anything to Penn State. You say, well, how can that be? Because I am firmly a believer that Penn State has been controlling its own destiny the entire time. They've never needed any help to get where they want to go. And then, of course, because they have enough big games on the schedule, with this one coming up, of course, on Saturday night. 7:30, Whiteout will be on beginning at 6 o'clock with the pregame show outside the Jordan Ticket Center on the Penn State Sports Network and News Radio 1070 WKOK. Final half hour, the guy will be on the sidelines Saturday night. Derek Williams will join us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Back with the final half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
SMC is where you want to be for your next new Ford during the annual Fall Ford Markdown Events. SMC is where you want to be if you want 46 Ford Escapes to choose from, starting under 20 grand. SMC is where you want to be for your next new Ford F-150. Choose from over 50 F-Series trucks starting at $23,994. Sunbury Motors has sold over 40,000 Ford trucks over the past 102 years. SMC is where you want to be if you want to buy a brand new Explorer for under 30 grand. 14 Explorers starting at $29,925. Every new Ford has deep discounts during SMC's annual Fall Ford Markdown event. Fusions, Focuses, and Fiestas are at the year's lowest prices. SMC is where you want to be if you want to save big money on your next new Ford. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show. Our thanks to Jack Hamm, who joined us in the previous half hour. Dick Girardi in the 3:30 half hour. Rich Scarcella opening half hour. Derek Williams in just a few moments. And don't forget, you can check all of this out on the Steve Jones Show podcast as we get you ready for Penn State and Michigan Saturday night at Beaver Stadium at 7:30. 6 o'clock will be the airtime on the Penn State Sports Network and News Radio 1070 WKOK. Before we get to Derek, time now for our sports bozo of the day. This isn't really in the bozo category, but just more a story of interest. Alex Rodriguez, as we all know, admitted his use of steroids during his 22-year career. And he says, look, bottom line is it cost him millions of dollars, a potential spot in the Hall of Fame. He says, but above all, he says it cost him his reputation. He says the chronic pain in his hip and the desire to put up big numbers drove Rodriguez to take performance-enhancing drugs. With Joe Buck, it was an excerpt released by Audience Network for the show Undeniable, which aired this week. There's so many frustrating things when you look back at it, Rodriguez told Joe Buck. Number one, you have a guaranteed contract for hundreds of millions of dollars. He says, literally, you can sit on the couch and get fat, right? He says, how stupid can you be? This thing cost me, he said, over $40 million, and it cost me my reputation, and it may have cost me the Hall of Fame and another number of other things. He said he spent restless nights thinking about how he put himself in that situation that saw him suspended for the entire 2014 season. He said, I remember sitting there at night, maybe 4 or 5 in the morning. He says, I probably did this 100 nights, and I would look up with tears and say, this is how he said it. How the F did I get myself in this position? And he actually used F. He says, I'm the only jackass that has pocket aces and can figure out a way to lose a hand. Rodriguez, of course, now is an analyst with Fox Sports. Said one of the toughest parts was actually telling his girls what had happened. Numerically, Rodriguez, who's now 42, had 696 home runs. Only Barry Bonds, Hank Aaron, and Babe Ruth have more. Rodriguez played for the Mariners, the Rangers, and, of course, the Yankees. And, of course, with the Yankees in 2009, he was a key part that helped the Yankees beat the Phillies in the World Series. All right, Jack Hamm and I up in the broadcast booth. I think the guy has the toughest job of all is actually on the sideline. That's Derek Williams. Derek, great job as always. Welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, thank you, Steven. That's not the toughest job. You guys are doing all the work. I'm just there just trying to talk to the kids on the sideline, and we have some great ones with us.
I want to talk about a couple things. First of all, special teams, so important when you played here and you made such a difference in kick returns, punt returns, and so forth. As you watch the special teams play of Penn State. How much confidence are you seeing now in the 11 guys that they run out there on special teams?
Well, you know, and I told DeAndre this last week when the punt return got cut, called back. I said, you know what, you should be happy with that because now you know the guys are going to give that extra effort to, you know, just string you along to get you there, to get you in the end zone, you know, and they believe in you. Usually when you don't see any penalties on a punt return and everything, everyone's just trying to get off the field. But, I mean, it's electrifying having Saquon and DeAndre back there, and it can definitely change the game there. Our special teams field goal block, punting is doing well. The only thing that you know, needs some work with is our kicking, field goal kicking. But everything else, I mean, the guys are coming down there, and those are big momentum plays there when you can do something on the special teams.
I think you'd agree with Jack and I when we talk about the fact that as a returner, having a feel for it is really important. I'm sure you agree with that. When you look at DeAndre Tompkins and Saquon Barkley, what is it in terms of the area of feel that you can see that they have in the return game?
Well, the biggest thing as a returner, the first thing that you have to know is that everyone can break out. So the first thing that both these guys have is confidence. I mean, you can't speak enough about Saquon. Saquon, every time he touches the ball, you know, that can be, you know, a big play or a touchdown. So just having that ability to get a kickoff and his confidence already saying that, hey, I can take this all away, you know, it's going to string him along some. DeAndre, you know, and it's him too. He has confidence. I'm on that sideline. He's like, hey, what do you think? You know, the punt is short this time. Should I try it? Should I not? You know, and I say, hey, when they're deep in their territory and they're punting you the ball, I will return every last one of them. You make one guy miss, and that's what he's been doing great this year because you have to, when you're watching him, you have to feel like, hey, you know, this guy might take it all away. Every time he's getting a punt, he's getting close to it. You know, so, hey, I think it's just the confidence that these guys have that are making these big plays for us.
What are you seeing, Derek, from the wide receivers so far as in terms of precision of route? Are they running things the way they should be? Are they rounding any? How precise are they in their routes right now?
I mean, when they get their opportunities, these guys are coming up with plays. I think right now, I don't think we're as polished as we are going to be later on in the season. I think Trace has gave some 50-50 balls, you know, but not as many as he did last year to really show and have the abilities to make plays at receivers. You know, and I think that's just going to come along as the season goes. I mean, Blacknoff, you know, Tompkins, DeAndre, all those guys there, they have the ability to make those plays. And they've been running the great routes, you know, one-on-one coverage they've been winning, you know. But in college, it's not the same as, you know, high school as far as when you're open. You know, these guys are Division I athletes, so – you know, open might be just a half a step and, you know, making a play and giving that receiver that chance of that 50-50 ball. And, you know, from what I've been seeing so far, these guys have, you know, been doing well. And I think it's still a lot more growth that these guys can do with just, you know, more opportunities out there.
We have seen some known entities this year. Saeed Blacknall, of course, doing what Saeed does. You mentioned DeAndre Tompkins. What about Juwan Johnson? We all liked him in the spring. What have you seen now once the regular season's come around, and now we've seen a half season's worth of work from him?
You know, for this being his first year really coming out, you know, again, it's confidence on what he's doing, his confidence on making him play. You know, I think that all our receivers are doing well as far as blocking downfield and everything. One thing that Johnson has that Charles have, that size is just ridiculous. These guys are 6'4", 215, running fast, making plays. It's just, you know, it's unfair with some of these guys and their size and with some of the abilities that they have there.
So, in other words, you're saying they're bigger than Butler, Norwood, and you?
We were little puny little peckers. Compared to these guys, we were puny. You know, Jordan was what, 165 soaking wet. Deion was 170 soaking wet. Oh Jesus, we were small.
Oh my goodness. in high school, you were an option quarterback, if I recall. I mean, you really ran the option in high school, right?
Steve, I was everything. I was a passing quarterback, option quarterback.
Yeah.
I was probably one of the best quarterbacks ever. I should have stayed there.
Yeah, and really, I've got your back on this.
I'm one for one in my college history on passing the ball there.
Yeah, 25 yards at Iowa to Mickey Schuler. I got it. It was down the middle, no less. You took the middle of the field on that play.
Down the middle, no gimmicks, no anything. Just read my keys and everything and deliver the ball.
I've got to look up your passing rating. It's astronomical. the RPO has option principles to it. So when you look at Trace McSorley, some of the keys in an RPO with option principles that you understand?
Well, you got to know when you're running that read option, is you're letting one defender go and you're just reading off that end defender as far as the defensive end or if it's the outside linebacker. What I've been seeing is that sometimes they're doing like a little wrap technique as far as you're letting that DN go and that middle linebacker is wrapping over either to take the quarterback or to take Saquon there. But most of the time, I think that just to switch it up a little bit, it's a big threat when we have the dual quarterbacks in the backfield because no one knows who's getting the ball there. But right now, I think, with the read option, everybody's keying down on Saquon and then pretty much wrapping that middle linebacker there. That's why our passing game is so important right now to open up our run. It's a little bit different than what people are normally used to. Usually people say, okay, well, I'm going to run to open up my pass and do play actions. Right now, our biggest thing is to getting off is not on first down, just running the ball. It's kind of like opening the offense up by passing the ball, getting these quick passes where it's pretty much considered like in a run game. We're doing these quick five-yard hitches. We're doing, five-yard outs. That's just, momentum plays that can lead to bigger drives. And then, after a while, the defense start playing a little soft because – now we're passing the ball a little bit and getting these little yards coming up, and then after a while, then the running game will take over.
I want to ask you about Tommy Stevens for a moment. Now, obviously, the passing game part of it, you weren't the quarterback, but you ran Wildcat. But you ran Wildcat slot, you ran reverses, and also had to run, obviously, your pass patterns. How did you have to work your time during the week to make sure you had each role down?
Well, we had special periods during our time when I was there. We had special periods for some of those formations where, I might be in a Wildcat, so we might have had a Wildcat period where the first five plays would be the five different plays that we would run out of Wildcat. Also, if a quarterback went down, maybe I would warm up with the quarterbacks and just hear what our coaches had to say on the defense that we're facing. Tommy's a little bit different. I think that, as a quarterback, being in a quarterback room, you have to understand what everyone's doing on every play. So, he can pretty much stay in his quarterback room and just use his God-given ability of, going out to a different position and knowing what to do and everything like that. That's the big thing. I mean, he's in those quarterback meetings with Moorhead and those guys there, and he understands. I'm pretty sure that he can go in and play left tackle and understand the protections and everything because they know everything that goes on in offense.
You've seen a lot of great running backs during the course of your lifetime at every single level. When you see Saquon Barkley, what do you see?
I see the best running back I've seen in my own two eyes. I had the privilege, and I'm saying my own two eyes. I'm not sure about history and all that. I had the privilege to watch Reggie Bush. Mm-hmm. I think Saquon is right there with him. As far as a college football player, Reggie, in NFL might not have been the same as he was in college, but in college, Saquon is definitely the best. At one point, I thought one player that I played with, Jarvis Best, was, among the best as far as the most electrifying players out there. But, this kid is special, and I honestly, the worst part about it is that I have some friends that are scouts, and they say, what can we expect? Like, what are some of his weaknesses? I said the only weakness is that he's too nice. Like, he's like too nice. How can your weakness be that you're too nice? Like, you're, I said, the kids are like so humble. He's everything. And I'm not saying nice on the football field. I think he turns into a beast. I'm just saying his personality, the kid is just so humble and everything like that. Like, I can't find anything wrong with the kid. So, I think that's the only thing that I ever said. And like I said, with my own two eyes, he's the best player that I've seen.
Derek, you've played in whiteouts at Beaver Stadium, and last year you were on the sideline as a reporter for the whiteout. Let's break this into two parts. As a player, what did it feel like running through the tunnel and playing in a whiteout like you did?
It was unreal. It's nothing in the world that can compare to it as far as sports related. We have the best fans. I mean, you talk about a team atmosphere. You're talking about loving your brothers and all the summer workouts and everything like that, the payoff, seeing guys throw up. Like, when you're in the whiteout and you're in that, you know, that bonding moment, that's when you really feel like, hey, everything we did was worth it. We're not going to lose this game. Like, we have our support here. It's the best atmosphere that you ever can think of.
Now let's go to the other part. Last year, you were a reporter in the whiteout, which means you didn't have a helmet on or anything like that, and you can take off the earbuds anytime you want, and you can listen to it. What was it like on that field last year, especially when Marcus Allen blocked the kick and Grant Haley ran it back?
See, I'm a nervous wreck on the sidelines, and I'm not playing or anything like that. Like, I'm going to tell you this. I was in the tunnel when that Iowa-Penn State game, because I didn't want to see the last place. I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, my stomach was just in my throat. I was like, oh, man, this is, you know. And then, honestly, last year at Ohio State, it was the same thing. Like, I was just so nervous. I kind of, like, closed my eyes, turned around, because it's just like, it's a feeling that really you can't explain. Like, you can just feel the adrenaline of these kids. You can feel them, their chemistry. You can feel like just how important it is. Like, it's crazy. Just being on the sideline, being that close and understanding and knowing these kids and the work that they put in. Like, it's a feeling that, you know, when they're in pressure moments, it's a feeling that I just can't understand.
A couple players had said to me, you know, they felt like when he did that, it felt like the ground shook on the field. You were down there. It had to be something else. So, you know, what you're saying, though, is that you rely on Jack and me to tell you when there are big moments.
Pretty much. My eyes are closed majority of the time when there's big moments. And my eyes are closed because I just don't want anything bad to happen. So I usually close my eyes or turn away from the game. But when he was there, it does feel like the stadium was about to collapse when he did block that kick there.
Your thoughts now? Obviously, they got a big stretch coming up. It starts with Michigan. What are your initial thoughts on this game on Saturday night?
Michigan. I want the first thing as a fan, as you know, that being, you know, my school. I think we need to. I hate to say this on your show. I think we need to kill them for, you know, what we did last year is pretty much like a payback. I think that Michigan's defense is probably one of the best defenses in the country. If we have prepared ourselves for these last 2 weeks and everything that we do as far as getting our run game started, passing the ball, being efficient on the special teams games, our defense has been playing so well right now. I think that really between Michigan and us, we have the top two defenses, not just in the Big Ten, but in the country. You know, and I just really think that this game is really going to show how special our offense is, because I think Coach Moore, I think Coach Franklin, all those guys have a great plan. And once we get that Michigan, I think, you know, those other games, once we get that one behind us and get that win there, I think these kids are going to start feeling, you know, the realness of, hey, we have a shot at being the national champs right now. This one right here, once we get the Sun in our belt, I think that this can propel us for a great finish to our season.
One final question, and I'll let you go, and that is as follows. You went through bye weeks when you were at Penn State, and you went through, obviously, bye weeks in the NFL because the NFL is 17 weeks, 16 games. After a bye week, what did it do for you, both physically and mentally, to have gone through it, and how much did it help?
Well, in the NFL, my bye week was consistent of me like going to Puerto Rico or something like that. So it felt real good getting away from the game. But really, it just gets your body back under you, you know. And you know, you can look over the first couple of weeks of the season. You can look at what's up to come. You can fix some of the mistakes that you've made throughout, you know, the period that you're at right now. And then you can start setting goals for the final haul. What I've always done is break the football season up into four quarters. You know, in the NFL with 16 games, I would say, you know, the first four is the first quarter. The most critical are the second and third. And, you know, then you have to finish strong with the fourth quarter. And it's pretty much the same. It's pretty much the same same way that these kids should be thinking right now. Right now, they're in the heat of things. They're right at the middle point of their season, and you know, it's something that they can look forward to, you know, finishing off the last half as strong as possible, making it better than the first half. And that's what I would do. I would always sit in my bye week and make goals for the rest of the season, try to figure out where I can improve and everything like that, and most of all, get my body underneath me.
Eric, you are the best. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
The outstanding Derek Williams. Great to have him with us. And he'll join Jack Hamm and me Saturday night in Beaver Stadium at 6 o'clock for the airtime. And, of course, the kickoff set for 7:30. Fun show today. Check it out in the Steve Jones Show podcast. Jack Hamm, Dick Girardi, Derek Williams, Rich Scarcello, the Reading Eagle. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.